For people in Canada living with dementia, few programs exist that embrace nature and the outdoors. Believing in the importance of nurturing an active, purpose-filled lifestyle for these valued members of our communities, Rebecca Churchyard was determined to change that. So she launched the very first care farm in Canada for people with dementia. It's a social enterprise with a mission of promoting purpose and belonging through the delivery of therapeutic gardening programs. And we speak with her next. As a side note, when I first started producing this podcast, my father, who had dementia, was still alive. One of the reasons that I reached out to Rebecca, in fact, was from my experience with the challenges trying to meet my father's unique needs. A lover of nature and the outdoors, I believe my father would have adored the social enterprise. Unfortunately, he passed away at the end of November. I dedicate this podcast to him. Welcome to In the Business of Change, where we speak with social entrepreneurs impacting their communities and the world. I'm your host, Elisa Birnbaum, publisher and editor-in-chief of Sea Change magazine. On today's episode, we speak with Rebecca Churchyard, founder and CEO of Green Care Farms. In our conversation, we discuss how her grandfather inspired her to start the social enterprise. We then look at the benefits, the many benefits of working on the farm for people with dementia. We explore the challenges, and then look at the landscape of care farms in Canada and around the world. Finally, Rebecca shares her ultimate vision of having green care farms for people with dementia in every community across the country.
I was introduced to your social enterprise recently, and I am really inspired by the work you're doing, not only because I personally have touched with dementia in my family, but also just because I feel this is such an important work in our society, as the growing number of people with dementia, and there's not all that much support. There is more than we have than we used to have, but for things like this, like interactive things that really bring them peace and that really bring them a way to be involved in community, be involved with nature. This is so important. I just see it with my father, who has dementia, who, you know, nature is so fundamental to who he was originally and still is today. So tell us about you and how you came to this.
Definitely. And thank you for giving the context about your dad, because it's always reassuring for me to hear that people find this personally applicable. So I appreciate you sharing that with me. And I agree. I mean, I work in the geriatric field otherwise, and I think we've come a long way in terms of assessment, diagnosis, pinpointing what it is where we're finding the neurodegeneration. We have a long way to go when it comes to what we do with that information next, besides right. Personal care. So
agreed, 10 times.
Yes. Yeah. Right. There's a lot more that a person needs besides support with activities of daily living. They absolutely need help with that, but there's a lot more than just that, particularly around the wellness side of things. So not just where you have disease or pathology or something's gone wrong, but how you can keep well. So I'm a social worker by education and training. So I have 3 degrees and I've always specialized in gerontology and psychology, that sort of area, older adults, aging, and also the brain from many different types of perspectives, and wellness is one of them. My story is probably similar to a lot of people out there who are interested in making improvements in this field. So I had a grandparent, my grandpa, who was living with dementia. Mm-hmm. He was diagnosed with the frontotemporal dementia when he was 63, which is super young, before even that magic 65 number, right? So I think for folks out there who have family members who've been diagnosed, you also know that that means there's probably a few years before that when somebody was living with those cognitive changes just without a diagnosis. So he's pretty young. And I witnessed and experienced what a lot of people go through. So my grandparents were going through the system looking for support. Of course, a diagnosis is an important step in there, but it's not everything. Mm-hmm. So they were looking for different supports, both medically, physically, and socially. And What they found is that there wasn't a whole lot of things that my grandpa found interesting or enjoyable, which meant that my grandma was in a very difficult position where she was providing nearly one-to-one care 24 hours a day, all hours of the day. Yeah. So she was in a difficult spot. But looking back on it, my grandparents did everything right. So they went to all the right appointments, they accessed all the right community and social services, and it still wasn't meeting the needs that they had at home.
Right.
So we tried traditional adult day programs, and they're amazing, and they absolutely have a place in our community. And we need more types of things that people with dementia can get engaged with. So my grandpa wasn't a big fan of staying inside all the time, and he's never been one for some of the more artsy side of things like crafts and things. My grandma, very creative lady. My grandpa, not so much, was more like an outside kind of guy. So he wanted to do his things and keep busy on the farm, and he wasn't able to. So it was from their place of frustration, having tried everything that they knew how to do and not having a lot of limitations when it comes to some of those socioeconomic factors that other people might have as well. So it really, truly was a system gap. It wasn't there for them to find. And that really informed my career trajectory in a lot of ways. Once they had both passed away, I was really sort of free from a lot of the caregiving concerns that I had before, and very inspired and upset with the way that things went for them. So I went looking for a alternative. I went looking for different things that other countries have for people with dementia. And I saw Dr. Simone de Bruin present on care farms for people with dementia. And once I saw that program, I thought, okay, that's great. I want that. What is that? Where's ours? And I found we didn't have any in Canada, which is sort of one of those. No, not for dementia. So we do have a few care farms for people with intellectual differences.
Okay.
What I would say, and I know it can be a lot of new information for folks who are new to the care farming world. So there are many care farms that exist for people who have social divergences, I guess is one way to put it. So maybe people who are living with psychiatric concerns, intellectual disabilities or differences, sometimes people who have faced a marginalized socialization or have spent time incarcerated. And a lot of the times, the argument for those programs are building a skills base so that we can help people get into the workforce, get into the labor market, right? So that they can have a job and produce, be a productive member of society.
Right.
So that's a different type of motivation for that type of programming.
Different need,
Different need. For people with dementia, it is more social, recreational, therapeutic, and then also respite for the care partner.
So you saw a specific type of care farm in, where was it?
In the Netherlands.
Netherlands. Okay. And did you just pick that one up and adopt it here in Canada, or is it have a lot of different variations to it? And tell us a bit about the model that you've adopted.
That's a fantastic question. So I think at the time, thinking back on it, I saw just this presentation on care farms and dementia, and I kind of just thought, okay, like that was enough for me to go off of. I've just been to the Netherlands in June of this year, so that was just about 4 months ago or so, and was 100% validated in the work that we're doing, so that was very exciting. Good. But what I have since learned is that care farms exist on a continuum. So you can have a care farm that provides kind of a one-off experience, so maybe a workshop or a one-time sort of intervention, something like that for a person with dementia, that progresses to a day program, which is what we provide. So that is a regular weekly intervention or program service for a person with dementia or a person attending a care farm. The continuum from that would be an overnight stay program, so a respite that has overnight capacity as well. So a family member might be able to go on a trip. We see those things in our traditional adult day programs now, but we certainly don't have any on care farms. And then the final progression from the overnight stay is a 24/7 living facility, which honestly is my dream of dreams, heart of hearts. I'm light years away from it right now, but that is what I would love to do, is provide a living and a dying opportunity for a person with dementia. So they might live the rest of their days on a care farm. So what we do is we do a day program, which is every week from the beginning of May to the end of September. It runs for 5 hours, morning to afternoon, and we have lunch together and we engage in a lot of fun stuff on the farm and a lot of work.
So what would be the benefits for people with dementia to come to your farm? And I'm also curious, along with that question, are these benefits evidence-based? What would you say?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So there is so much evidence out there to show the benefits of care farming, and they exist on the same continuum that I just went over before. So from even just kind of the nature-based intervention all the way to the living facility. We've got, so just to give you an idea of kind of the scale and the difference, I learned in the Netherlands that they have hundreds of care farms in regional cooperatives.
Wow.
So to give you an idea of size and scale, I live in the Waterloo-Wellington area in Ontario. In the size of Waterloo-Wellington catchment area, the geography, mm-hmm. you would have about 100 care farms that work together cooperatively. So they really have mm-hmm. just a working machine and
My
cooperative
goodness.
Of care farms. Yes. And the vast majority, all of the ones I saw are social enterprises, which is another interesting piece just to kind of mention and mentioned that I was 100% validated, truly was. So what we have from all of those cooperatives and all of those really well-developed programs and services is we have a thriving body of research. Some studies have been over 10 years long by dozens of scientists in the Netherlands. That's where the most of the research comes from. What the research tells us is that there are broad benefits in social, physical, mental health, all across the board. So broadly speaking, you can see an increase in functional mobility. You can see an increase in appetite. So people are eating more, they're eating more nutritious food, they're more interested in eating. And a lot of that has to do with the social setting for the eating, for the meals, and also the connectivity with the production of food. So that's one of the big ones, especially for the geriatric world, is, you know, we're always wondering how we can encourage some of our older adults to eat more, right? The appetite cessation that we see happening. So that's a really nice outcome.
Mm-hmm.
For clinical applicability, you also see a marked reduction in the use of atypical antipsychotics. So this might get a bit technical for some people out there, but some people with dementia experience behavioral changes, or they experience changes in the way that they might respond to environmental stimulus. Mm-hmm. So they don't have the same filter or buffer that they might have before. And so what we see sometimes in traditional clinical settings or in prescriptions that come home with people are atypical antipsychotics, and so or typical antipsychotics. Mm-hmm. So what we have found with the care farm research is that it shows that people who are engaged in this type of intervention or program, that there's a marked reduction in the amount of prescriptions that way,
wow.
which is really exciting to see as well, that people are really able to be meaningfully redirected instead of medicated. We're always looking for options for that. There are a lot of social benefits in terms of a decrease in loneliness, a decrease in social isolation, increase in meaningful relationships, sense of identity, belonging, self-worth. There are abundant results for the caregiver experience, that they feel more like themselves. They feel, I think the word I want to use is satisfied, that their person, their loved one, is having a good day, which isn't always the experience when we're looking for respite. But most people who are attending care farms want to do so. They truly are going to work, and that is an important sense of worth and identity for all of us. Yeah. So there are benefits there, and there are just so many physical benefits for retaining muscle strength, for the use of our muscles. I think I already mentioned functional dependence, so mobility, walking. The visual stimuli is just incredible, if you can imagine just kind of being outside in a nature setting. And I always say the blue skies and the green fields ahead of you and all the little critters around. Just even that in a landscape is a lot for the brain to be processing, and it's very therapeutic. So tons of mental health benefits.
Amazing. Amazing. And so what like specific activities are they involved in? You said they're put to work. You know, there's something about feeling that you're contributing, right? And you're working. And so I think that in itself is important, but I'm curious, what type of work are they doing on your farm? What are you putting them up to?
Yeah, you are so right. And when I present on the subject, I often talk about social value and how we describe social value, how we define our own social value, and how does that change when our vocation changes, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes mm-hmm. because we want that, we direct the change, and sometimes something else has directed the change for us, but we have the change in social value, and it absolutely impacts everybody. I'll mention that Our care farm operates out of Andrew's Farm Market and Winery. So we have a partnership with that farm to operate on their property, which is fantastic. Nice. So we have an agreement to lease part of the property, and that is the sensory garden. So most of our programming is located in the sensory garden, which is a half acre plot on the 165 acre farm. So typical day, we meet at the front. We kind of all journey back to the sensory garden together. We've got this beautiful split rail fence at the front. So one of the first tasks is to open up the chain to let us into the fence. And it might seem simple, but it is something that is achievable for someone. And you can kind of work out the kinks of the chain and get it open. In the next 5 hours of programming, we engage in a lot of traditional gardening activities, as well as I would say simple animal care and simple maintenance. So sort of landscaping maintenance, those sorts of things. So we do a lot of planting, digging, weeding, watering, transplanting. We do a lot of planning in designing the space. So we've got a variety of structures in the sensory garden. We have a bunch of different garden beds, boxes. We have A-frame trellises. We have this beautiful arbor that goes in the middle of the garden, which we walk through. I'm going for like a secret garden type of feel with that one. So most of what we're doing in the space is taking care of that space and sorting out what needs to happen next in the different areas. We've planted well over 150 different species of things last year to grow. Some of those are perennial and some of them we're planting every year. And since it's our second year in operation, we are still working on what is the ideal design. So from year one to year two, we transplanted some perennial plants, yarrow and sage, echinacea, chives. We had a lot of those different plants that are going to come back every year and organize them into a medicinal mandala. So that's a very intentional sensory experience that we wanted to move to the front of the garden instead of the back. So things like that, where we're planning intentionally, but we're also have a lot of flexibility in our day. We, you know, take rotten tomatoes to the chickens. That's lots of fun. We visit the goats. We pick cherries when they're ready. We see the apples when they're ready. There's always something interesting based on the time and the season. Right. So in the beginning, you have a lot of planting, getting things started, a lot of growing green, new, right? And then as time progresses, you're really looking at harvesting and tons of flowers. We had some stunning flowers this year. It was a really beautiful place to be. I want to mention as well, in terms of the social value or the sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things that I let my members know, as well as the care partners, is that we are growing food in that plot for the food bank. So we grow food for the Food for Life food redistribution program, which is a program that distributes fresh produce into street outreach. So people who would benefit from having fresh food, they deliver it to their doors.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yes. And so every single one of my clients really resonates with that. Yeah. They really do feel like, okay, I know what the food bank is. And yeah, sure, I can help with that.
And so I know this is still relatively new, but curious what your biggest challenges are.
The biggest challenge overall is probably somewhat social. I think we don't know that there are interventions like this in other countries. And because we don't know that, we're not necessarily equipped or prepared to be asking for them or looking for them, if that makes sense. So I think just the general awareness of the program is probably one of the biggest challenges. I think the other challenge, which I also classified as social, I'm not sure if that fits, but is the perception of a neurocognitive disorder, of a neurodegeneration, and the perception of someone's ability once there is that diagnosis, or, you know, what does life look like for them then? I think there is a well-needed focus on safety, right, and medical care and medication and those sorts of considerations. And I really think we need to provide equal focus on keeping them well and in healing settings. That's probably what I'd say are some of the, it's pretty lofty, but those are the biggest challenges, I think.
I think I can appreciate that completely. And in terms of your biggest lessons learned so far,
the biggest lesson that I learned is because I had spent so much time invested in learning this model and sorting out the differences between Canada and the Netherlands and what it would take to implement this model and do this model. I think I learned that a lot of people haven't had the opportunity to look at our systems that closely and suss out where care comes from or where help comes from or what the support looks like and who kind of does what in the geriatric system.
Right.
What is the family responsible for? What is the doctor responsible for? What is the geriatric assessment unit responsible for? Like those sorts of different pieces. So I think I learned that I, as a business owner, need to be prepared to have kind of different types of conversations with different types of stakeholders. And, you know, my friends in geriatrics clinically are interested in different types of information than a family member is interested in when they're right. looking at the program for their loved one, right? For their person. So that's definitely a lesson, is to have enough information from each of the stakeholder groups where they can find themselves in that information and find it topically relevant, but also diverse enough to attract the diversity of audience that we're looking for. In terms of informing next steps, I mean, just starting is a massive accomplishment. Yes. So I often try to remind myself
of
that.
Oh my gosh. Yes, it's huge. Yep. Huge.
It is. I truly would love to do a couple things. The vision of the care farm is a care farm in every community in Canada. So I'd really love to see our work influence, inspire, spread, expand, grow, all of those different words to other communities. And I want to be able to support those communities in doing so in a way that retains the integrity of the care farming model. Mm-hmm. So that means on a farm, and that means with, you know, engagement and work in the outdoors. So nature-based intervention. I'd really love to be able to do that. And when it comes to the deepening side of expansion, like I said before, I would absolutely love to do a 24/7 living facility. I'm not sure 100% how that will happen yet. I'm open. So perhaps it'd be somebody who has a farm and isn't sure what to do with it, or, you know, somebody's had experiences with the traditional care sector and is interested in doing something different, or someone with industry experience, but they're not sure how to apply it in that way. I think that's how I definitely would love to see it manifest in the future.
We talk about how many care farms there are in Netherlands, for example, if you use them, right? And here we didn't have any. Can you understand what it is about the Netherlands and the way they approach dementia, or maybe it's their healthcare system that has led to the development of so many of these care farms, and here we have none. Can you understand the distinction?
Understand? No. Speak to it? Yes.
Okay. Speak to
I don't
it.
Know if I can understand it, but I can provide some comment. There's lots of different things. I mean, right now in Ontario, for sure, our healthcare system is in flux. I think that's the word I'm comfortable using. It's in flux.
Yes.
In the Netherlands, we have a very different tax base to draw from, and a very different infrastructure for healthcare administration. Now, it is important to point out that all of the care farmers that I engaged with, at least in June, are social enterprises. So they're all farmers who own their property that are providing these types of programs. I imagine, I can't say with 100% accuracy, but I imagine that there is more cooperation between the healthcare system and the farmer as a social enterprise to enable them to provide these options for people with dementia, which is going to help us have more of these interventions available to people, which is very important to me. And also why we decided to go that route is so that we could provide the intervention sooner. There's also the history to consider, right? The age of the countries respectively, and how long folks have been there, how long they've been investing in the space. One thing that I found really funny is in the Netherlands, they will call something that is a property 2 or 5 acres a farm. So in Canada, you have farms that are like on average, probably at least 100 acres, bigger, right? And we have massive, huge farms. But for them, 2 to 5 acres is big enough for a farm. So they also have got, they're at a different stage of formation for land segregation and where they're at for how agricultural land is divvied up and what's considered agricultural land. So that's a big difference. Their population density is different. Obviously, Canada is absolutely massive, and the Netherlands could probably fit in it, I don't know how many times, at least 3 times. I'll be very conservative with my guess, but.
True. Yeah. Good point. So, yeah.
Those are some of the differences. But I think one of the biggest differences is just the history of the intervention. They have 40 years of care farm history. And Canada, we have a departure from agriculture as a lifestyle or as a vocation for a vast majority of the population.
Yeah.
So something I talk about a lot is that a lot of my clients, if not them, absolutely their parents were raised on a farm. Like the farming as a way of life is not that far, generationally speaking. It's not that far away. So
got it. Interesting. Also thinking that maybe, and I know some places in Europe, they just look at dementia differently. Like we are much more focused on put them in a home.
Whatever. So
yeah.
I love that you brought this up because I think one thing that I loved about the folks in the Netherlands, at least my take on it, is that they're very much about efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even like, you know, we talked about social value. We didn't talk about ageism, but I'm sure you're familiar with the concept. Uh-huh. So for them, it's like, it's not so much the social value or the ageist concepts of it. It's more efficient. Why would I build all of these buildings and fill them temporarily with people who are unhappy when they could still be producing and providing, you know, needed? Yeah, it's about efficiency.
I actually really like that. Like,
I like it too.
Can they still work then? Put them to work. What is
of course. Right, can they still work? And like, if you know, why would you spend the money on medication if you could provide them with these interventions? Like, why are we doing that? So the argument for efficiency is much more understood, I guess, in what they're doing. And so is something that I learned, the agreeability of a social enterprise in this sort of space, which was very good for me to see and kind of contend with. I'm a social worker, right? So I think originally when I first understood it was going to be a social enterprise, well, I was landing on what type of model it would be and landed on social enterprise. I felt uncomfortable with it for a long time. And after going to the Netherlands, I really understand why that is the choice. You have so much more control over the work that you're doing, which has been very important as the first one in Canada. Mm-hmm. It is not possible for me to replicate highly regulated programs. I'm not able to on a farm. It's just not going to happen. Right. So,
see, I think that was a brilliant decision on your part.
Thank you. You mentioned challenges earlier. I think that is probably one of the greatest challenges I have is that immediately when people hear enterprise, they think it's a bad word or something like that. And so I do get a lot of questions about that. And I reserve the right to change my mind in the future, but I think it has allowed us with agility. Mm-hmm. We are able to be more agile and change the way that we're working, those sorts of things differently than we would be able to if we were not a social enterprise.
I agree. And I think as the social enterprise movement grows even stronger here, I think you might find more supports and more, you know, reason to stick with that model.
Well, one thing that feels really important to me is that I want people with dementia to be seen as valuable. Like that's very important to me that they're seen as valuable and that they're seen as valuable contributors. Like so many of the people that do well in the program are people who've worked hard their whole lives. Mm-hmm. My grandpa was the same way, worked hard his whole life, very devoted to the environment, very devoted to the outdoors and to engagement with the outdoors. And it was like, as soon as he was diagnosed with dementia, he wasn't allowed to leave the house anymore. Right. And I just think it's so fundamentally wrong.
Yeah.
Our family felt very much like we were like backed into a corner is the best way to describe it, that we weren't able to choose anything different because there wasn't anything else to choose. So he had high quality care in terms of what was available, but it still didn't meet his most basic needs of who he was, which was to be outside. Mm-hmm. So he was in a traditional locked unit in the last days of his life, and he lied down in bed most of the time. And it just really, it profoundly stayed with me that it shouldn't be that when people are diagnosed with dementia, they're not allowed outside under the auspice of their safety. Like, what is that? It just really bothered me. It was probably at some point in time, someone's really good marketing campaign, someone's really good, I don't know, marketing campaign around whether it was research or the development of institutions, I don't know. But somewhere along there, we drank the Kool-Aid that, okay, this should be indoor based. And then it turned into staffing capacities, resource restraints, like those sorts of things. And I just think that we kind of need to return to the most basic activity of, this is my family member, they like to be outside. How can we make that happen?
Thank you for listening to In the Business of Change. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast to hear other conversations with inspired social entrepreneurs and changemakers working on challenges in their communities and across the globe. I'm your host, Elisa Birbaugh.
Thank you.